Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is in the United States. It's a two-week tour meeting with business leaders across the country, doing media interviews, and he kicked it all off on Tuesday at the White House with President Trump.
It's an honor to have the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia with us and his representatives, many of whom I know, and I met in May when we were over there, where a promise of $400 billion was made by Saudi Arabia for the purchase of our equipment and other things. And the relationship is probably the strongest it's ever been. We understand each other.
The Crown Prince is on a PR mission here in the United States. This is not the conservative, Wahhabist home of Osama bin Laden and misogynist laws. This is a new Saudi Arabia, says Salman, reforming and ready for business that isn't just oil.
What has been this Saudi Arabia for the past 40 years? Is that the real Saudi Arabia?
Absolutely not. This is not the real Saudi Arabia. I would ask your viewers to use their smartphones to find out, and they can Google Saudi Arabia in the 70s and 60s,
and they will see the real Saudi Arabia easily in the pictures.
Salman is a sophisticated man with a sophisticated media strategy. Meanwhile, American news outlets have gotten some criticism for glowing coverage of Mohammed bin Salman, like this report from Nora O'Donnell on 60 Minutes on CBS on Sunday.
Known by his initials MBS, his reforms inside Saudi Arabia have been revolutionary. He is emancipating women, introducing music and cinema, and cracking down on corruption in a land with 15,000 princes.
Well, does that take on MBS, reformer, revolutionary, emancipator of women, tell the whole story? The Intercept reported yesterday that the Crown Prince is close to Jared Kushner, so close, in fact, that before Kushner lost his security clearance, Salman boasted to friends that he has Jared Kushner, quote, in my pocket. So, we wanted to take a closer look at the Crown Prince and see how well the media coverage here in the United States matches up to the reality. Sheila Carapico is professor of political science and international studies at the University of Richmond. Sheila, thanks for being here.
Thanks for calling.
So, let's talk about Mohammed bin Salman back home in Saudi Arabia. He's been busy advertising reforms like letting women drive cars and letting women attend sporting events, appearing at least to crack down on corruption. That famous case, dozens of wealthy and royal Saudis held captive in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh. Why does Salman want to push these reforms and these makeovers now?
To the extent that there's any critical view of Saudi Arabia in the United States and even more so in Europe, it's for their murderous war in Yemen. And it's not a coincidence that his visit to the United States coincides exactly with the three-year anniversary of the beginning of an unprovoked attack on Yemen. So he's advertising kind of cosmetic changes like letting women drive and at the same time avoiding quite successfully, for instance, in the 60-minute piece that you played a little bit of, really avoiding scrutiny of the war. And it also happens that this was supposed to be the week that the resolution brought forth by Bernie Sanders and Senators Murphy and Lee trying to limit American support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen came to the Senate. So he's got this media blitz going on in an effort to divert attention from legitimate criticisms of how the conduct of the war. And, of course, second point, there are other things going on in Saudi Arabia. You mentioned the crackdown on corruption, which can also be seen as a purge and a shakedown. And then there's been minimal attention to the horrific human rights abuses inside of the kingdom, including, you know, the flogging of bloggers and repression of Saudi Shia.
Well, President Trump was definitely eager to promote warm relations with Saudi Arabia when Mohammed bin Salman visited the White House there in the Oval Office. We heard it. What's been going on behind the scenes with that relationship?
Well, I don't know, of course, exactly behind the scenes, but I think what's on the scene, what we can see very clearly, is that the president is delighted to continue to sell weapons. He seems to think that the war in Yemen is some sort of American jobs program. And I think that's genuinely how he sees it.
Well, Professor Carapico, we played some cuts from the 60 Minutes interview, an interview which you say glossed over the war in Yemen. If you had a shot at the Crown Prince to ask him one question, what would it be?
Well, I would wish that somebody would ask him a much more direct question along the lines of, What plans have you got to bring an end to the war in Yemen? I mean, he'll respond to that, that the Houthis have to unconditionally surrender. If you look at the transcript of that interview, he makes it sound like Saudi Arabia was attacked first, which is just so far from any plausible telling of the story. So it would be necessary for a proper journalist to really ask the kind of follow-up questions, you know, to ask the initial question about plans to bring the war to an end, but then to ask follow-up questions that don't allow him to just, you know, basically prey on the fact that the journalists, frankly, a lot of them don't know what's going on. So we also saw last week, usually Saudi Arabia doesn't allow journalists in, but last week they had Steve Inskeep of NPR. Apparently there was a 10-person team from 60 Minutes. There have been some other ones let in. But, you know, they're given a particular script, and they, you know, forfeit their responsibility to ask hard follow-up questions.
Are you suggesting that Steve Inskeep and the team at NPR read from a script given to them by the Saudi government?
No, I wouldn't go that far. But Inskeep's opportunity to cover the war in Yemen was that he was flown to Saudi Arabia, where he was able to do interviews in Saudi Arabia. And then they brought him to one place in Yemen where he could sort of look down from a mountain towards Sana'a. And that was the vantage point that he was allowed to have. So by limiting access and then providing it very selectively, they were able to craft the message quite brilliantly, I think.
Professor Sheila Carapico of the University of Richmond, thank you so much.
Thank you.